This is Vermont Edition. I'm Steve Zind. Central to the campaign of Vermont Senator Bernie Sanders was a critique of the role of money in politics, especially large donations from wealthy individuals to help candidates who support their policies or principles. Clearly, millions of people agree with Sanders and supported him, yet more and more money, including dark money from undisclosed donors, is pouring into politics in the hope of influencing elections. New Yorker staff writer Jane Mayer spent a number of years researching the sources and impact of this money and writes about it in her book Dark Money, The Hidden History of Billionaires Behind the Rise of the Radical Right. And she's leading a discussion in Weathersfield on Saturday and joins us now. Jane Mayer, thanks for taking the time.
Great to be with you.
So your book focuses on the Koch brothers, two of the Koch brothers, I guess, Charles and David, whose fortune is estimated at $90 billion. Why are they such a potent force compared to other wealthy people we hear about, Sheldon Adelstein or George Soros, who use their money to influence politics?
Well, the Kochs have really become kind of the poster childs of dark money. They not only spend in the way that's disclosed that many other people do, like, the Steyer family that is on the Democratic side, but they also spend a ton of money secretly. And that's really what I was trying to trace in this book, which was how this kind of flood of underground dark money affects America, not just our elections, but really the way we can govern or the problems we have governing. Why does Congress not work well? Part of the reason is it's tied up in knots by money.
And I think you point out, this isn't all just about politics and political races or about the Supreme Court decision of a number of years ago. This is something that goes back in time and that involves academia and many other aspects of American society.
Yeah, I'm so glad you made that point, because really what I tried to do in this book was trace the history here. It's really kind of an untold chapter of American history, which I got kind of obsessed with, really, which goes back to the 70s and even before. But what you find with these two of the four Koch brothers, Charles and David, is an urge to change how America thinks. They really wanted to launch a revolution in this country, an anti-government revolution, and they didn't have much luck when they tried to just run for office. Their ideas were radical and unpopular, but they did have a family fortune, and they decided to take that fortune and use it to promote their ideology in hundreds of ways, most of which people don't really understand are all being funded by the same source. So you've got all of these different organizations that they fund, think tanks, academic programs, advocacy groups like Americans for Prosperity, that are kind of crawling across the country, and they seem independent, but they're actually funded by the same tiny group of people.
You know, you mentioned that their father was a big anti-communist. That was his crusade, in a way.
He was one of the founding members of the John Birch Society. That's right.
Mm-hmm. What is it that Charles and David Koch want to change specifically? Social policy, foreign policy, financial policy?
Well, they're really interesting. It's mostly Charles, I guess he's about 81 now, and he's kind of a radical libertarian who, from the start, like his father, thought of programs that were started in the New Deal and afterwards, such as Social Security and welfare, as anathema. They really dislike government social programs, and they hate taxes, and they hate regulations on business. To some extent, this is self-serving because, of course, they pay high taxes because they're extraordinarily rich. They're among the richest people in the world. And they have a huge company, Koch Industries, which has been, over the years, one of the largest polluters in America. And so they've been at war with all kinds of environmental regulations. And they've been taken to court over and over again, and they are the largest creators of toxic waste in America. But they're trying to push the government back off their backs and get a kind of an America that works for them.
What would you say they've accomplished so far? What do we see as evidence of their influence or success, as far as they'd see it, for all the money they've devoted to this?
Well, they've had a kind of a mixed record. They've done surprisingly well, I think, given how unpopular their ideology was to begin with. I mean, when they began, they were laughed at by standard conservatives like William F. Buckley, called them anarcho-totalitarians. You know, they're so anti-government, they're almost anarchists. The place I think, and I write about it in the book, is one of the places where they've had the biggest impact is on environmental policy, and specifically on stopping the federal government from doing anything about global warming. They have tied Congress up in knots on this. They have held out money to elect congressmen and senators who will serve their interests and for instance, not tax fossil fuels in a way that would hurt their bottom line. And they've been amazingly successful at this. So you see kind of all over the world, governments are beginning to try to do something about global warming, and scientists are more and more believing it's a serious problem. But the American public and Congress are going in the opposite direction. There's more doubt about global warming in polls that you see in the American public, partly because the Kochs and others in their group have funded huge disinformation campaigns.
You make it sound like they're really motivated by their own self-interest, not that they have some great principles that they believe in that they're trying to champion.
Well, you know, it's so hard to know what motivates people's politics. In the case of the Kochs, I mean, the thing is, people often wonder, well, are they principled or is this just greed? And the truth is there's kind of no difference, really, because their principles serve their interests. And they would argue that they serve everybody's interests, not just their own. But they also argue that what's good for their business is good for the country. Kind of, you know, it's an old-fashioned point of view that some businessmen have had over the years, that if their business does well, then the country will do well. And so what's good for them, they think, is good for everybody.
You know, as you point out in the book, as you've mentioned—
Can I just say something about
course.
That? I mean, that would be what they would argue. But I have to say, the one place where I really would have to question the sincerity of that is about their views on global warming, because in reality, both Charles and David Koch are graduates of MIT. These are very smart men who know a lot about science. Yet they continue to argue that there is not climate change, and if there is, it's good for everyone. And there's so much evidence on the other side. You really have to wonder if they're sincere or if they're just representing their business. In the end of the day, it's hard to imagine how they could really believe that this is good for everyone.
You know, I think there are people listening who are from all along the political spectrum who are concerned about this issue, the role of money in politics and in civic life, but are convinced. We're all convinced that when it comes down to our own decisions about issues, about the candidates we support, that people like the Koch brothers have little influence over those decisions. Is there something happening in the background that we're missing that we really should be aware of when we're making those decisions?
Yeah. I mean, it took 5 years to write this book. I hope people read it, because you can see the money's had a tremendous effect. And the, you know, the hardest place for people to buy right now, for the super rich to buy, is the presidency. It's the most obvious office that everybody's watching. But the place where money has the biggest effect is going down the ticket. And you can see all over the country, less so in Vermont than in many other states, you can see where money has a huge effect in state races, in legislatures, in Senate races, House races. Mm-hmm. It's everywhere.
I guess, you know, what I was asking was we think, oh, that money, that's influencing the way other people think, not the way I think. But so I'm asking you, are we being influenced more than we perhaps think on by those sort of expenditures?
Well, I mean, I think what's good for people is to be smart consumers in politics as in other areas, and pick up the rock and see who's funding that argument you're listening to. And that's what I've tried to do with this book, is say, hey, look at this. There's a funding stream here, and it goes right back to these same people and the same company.
What's the prospect for anything actually changing?
I think the prospect's good. I think this year we've seen huge disgust nationally from on both the left and the right against the idea that a few of the richest people in the country will control our political elections. That's why Bernie's been popular, and in a way it's why Trump's popular. I think there's a kind of a rebellion taking place, and if that can be channeled in a positive way towards reform, I think there will be reform.
Jane Mayer, thanks for talking with us today.
Great to be with you.
Jane Mayer will be leading a discussion about the 2016 election this Saturday, August 27th, at the Weatherfield Center Meeting House.